Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
You are a kid in the school cafeteria. Your parent or guardian has fallen behind on paying your school meal account. You go to checkout with your hot lunch, and it's taken away right there in line, and you get a cold sandwich instead. That is called meal shaming, and as of last Friday, it's no longer legal in Massachusetts. The move is part of a larger bill on meals in schools that Governor Charlie Baker signed into law. There is a lot, folks, going on around school meals right now, from increased need and demand to federal funds that make it possible for all kids in a school district to eat free in some cases, and then to massive supply chain shortages that are throwing food programs into disarray, even as kids need that nutrition more and they need support in their learning during an ongoing pandemic. So we're going to kind of take stock of the whole situation, starting with Carrie Young, our senior education reporter here at WBUR. Carrie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Carrie, I want to just ask you, was lunch shaming a widespread phenomenon here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, I mean, so I think I wouldn't say that the numbers are insignificant, but, you know, they weren't one-offs either. The last comprehensive report that I saw on this came from the Massachusetts Law Reform Institute in 2018. So it is a few years old, but at that time, they found that 28 districts had policies where students just don't eat if they don't have money. They also found that more than 60 elementary and middle schools did have those punitive measures for students with school lunch debts. And there were about 24 districts who actually hired a debt collection agency to deal with school meal debt. So again, you know, these aren't one-offs. But to put it into context, it wasn't a majority of school districts either. There are about 400 districts in Massachusetts. So it was definitely an issue, though.
And would you say that the example that I just gave was pretty representative of what a meal shaming would look like?
Yeah, I mean, the cold sandwich, kind of throwing away the hot meal, is one that you hear about a lot. But there are other things, too, like you know, making it so that the student can't go on a field trip or some kind of like extracurricular activity at school, or even, I know I've heard of schools keeping students from walking at graduation. So there's a lot of punitive measures that I have heard of from schools that have happened over school lunch debt, some kind of debt that is not the student's responsibility. It's between the adults.
Okay, so let's juxtapose that with the level of need right now, Carrie, especially maybe give us a before and after with the pandemic.
Yeah, well, so I think the biggest number or the best representative number here is the number of families that are turning to SNAP benefits, and that is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And since February of 2020, there's been a more than 20% increase in the number of households that are participating in Massachusetts. So that's a pretty significant increase. So I would say, you know, with the pandemic and all of the disruptions it had, you know, whether it was, you know, just socially and emotionally, but also economically, it had a huge impact on the need for school meals.
And tell us a little bit about the supply chain issues that we're also seeing right now.
Oh, yeah. School meals are not immune to these supply chain problems. Schools have been having a hard time predicting when things like plastic utensils, I know that's a big one, disposable plates, things like that might come in. There's definitely enough, but your child might be using a spork instead of a spoon for applesauce, is one example I heard. You know, other times it's ingredients too. So there is definitely enough food, but maybe you were expecting a certain type of spice or tomato sauce or whatever it might be. The supply chain issues are just making it so that, you know, predicting when a shipment might come in is going to be really hard. So that's last minute menu changes and things like that. Also, there's a truck driver shortage that's all part of this supply chain problem. And so one thing, districts had been used to getting all of their food delivered to each of their buildings for the most part. I guess that depends on the district. But I have heard of at least one district who did have their meal or their food delivered to each individual school, but now it's all going to one school because that's the only truck driver they could get, and then they're individually going to that school and bringing it in. So it's affected a lot.
So Carrie, I'm about to bring in two other voices, but just very briefly before I do, tell us what else was in the bill the governor signed.
Yeah, outside of that banning of shaming tactics, which was huge, it also requires that schools where a majority of students who come from low-income families, they have to enroll the school in a federal program that provides free breakfast and lunch to all students. Now, it does offer a waiver to get out of that, but in order to even vote on having that waiver in the school committee, districts also have to sign up for a class to learn more about those federal programs. So they have to actually do some work to really be able to say we can't do this.
Okay, Carrie Young, sit tight. I will come back to you in a few minutes. Right now, I want to bring in an advocate and a school leader. We have Aaron McAleer, president and CEO of Project Bread, which is a nonprofit focused on connecting people to reliable food sources and advocating for equitable food policies, and John Cabral, superintendent of the Taunton Public Schools here in Massachusetts. Aaron, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me on.
And Superintendent Cabral, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. May I call you John?
Of course.
Okay, John, how many meals has the Taunton Public Schools served roughly since the start of the pandemic?
Since the start of the pandemic, dating back to March 13th when we sent our students home, roughly over 600,000 meals were distributed to locations throughout our community to ensure that families and students did not go without.
And 600,000 meals, how many kids?
We have 8,000 students in our school district prior to the pandemic, and right now with the full return as we begin to recover post-pandemic, we're still hovering around 8,000, so give or take 8,000 students. But we also made sure any students attending the city vocational school, any student attending parochial schools that were open at the time, as well as the agricultural school in the town next door, any student who went to one of these sites that was hosted at a school or hosted at strategic areas throughout the community, if a family showed up looking for meals, they were not turned away and no questions were asked.
All right, I'll go to Aaron in just a second. But John, 600,000 feels like a massive number to me. Am I right?
It dwarfs in comparison to some of my neighbors in surrounding area urban districts. So I think about my colleagues in New Bedford, Fall River, my hometown, got to give a plug, in New Bedford. When you put our four school systems together, student-wise, we're about the size of Boston. So if I distributed 600,000 meals, I'm sure those communities are north of 600,000.
And Aaron, what to think about that? What's the conclusion you want us to draw from what John just told us?
School meals are essential. I mean, this crisis exposed that in the beginning when schools closed and we realized how many kids across the state had been relying on school meals. For low-income kids, over half their daily calories can come from school meals. And that's the conclusion. And we need to make sure that these meals are accessible for all. John gave great data for his district. You know, another important thing to point out is that the U.S. Census did monthly surveys throughout this pandemic, and school meals were the number one source of free food for families in Massachusetts. SNAP, which Carrie referenced, was the number one anti-hunger program, but school meals were the number one source of free food. So they're critical in the work against hunger here in our state.
Okay, so I'm going to work with the two of you. We're going to get wonky for just a second, because as I understand it, during the pandemic, there is federal funding that allows a school district to provide free meals to everyone. John, am I understanding that correctly, and are you doing that in Taunton?
Correct. We meet the criteria. So I have an outstanding food service director, and she knows how I feel, how I felt about food shaming. And if we could eliminate food shaming and also provide the students in our community with healthy, nutritious meals at no cost, then it was a no-brainer for us to go with the program, to utilize the program, and to keep assessing our data to the point which we qualify. So it's a great program in the sense that our students, when they come into school in the morning, they receive a healthy, nutritious breakfast, whether it's a grab-and-go or whether it's breakfast in the classroom. You know, our students, K through 12, are receiving a healthy, nutritious breakfast to start the day every day. And then when it comes to lunch, no salad bars, no different choices with drinks, hot meals, cold meals. We provide a wide range of food that meets the health standards that have been set forth by state and national agencies. So I'm very proud of the work that we've done here in Taunton, but more so I'm proud of the work that's being done by our urban communities. You know, we are the fabric of many of our communities. A lot of our parents, a lot of the agencies in the cities and towns that we represent look to us during a time of need. So for school departments to be able to step up and work collaboratively with our partners on the city, you know, to take care of our great cities, it's a win-win all around, and it really goes to demonstrate how schools are ingrained in the social fabric of their communities.
So with that in mind, Aaron, Governor Baker signs a bill that says, essentially says that if a school district has a certain percentage of kids who qualify for free meals, then the district needs to provide free meals to everyone. But you'd like to go even further than that, and you're advocating for legislation that would go further, correct?
That's correct. So right now in Massachusetts, but also across the country, we have universal free school meals. And that's because of a federal waiver from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that was, you know, passed as part of the pandemic. That is going to expire at the end of this school year. So there are many districts that will continue to provide universal free school meals, like Taunton. And thank you so much for your leadership in that community. But in other communities, they will not. So the purpose of this legislation is for those communities where, as you said, over 50% of kids are low income. We are heavily encouraging them, mandating them to apply for the community eligibility provision that would ensure that there are universal free school meals in those districts. But where Project Bread would like to go even further is for us just to have universal free school meals for every single kid in Massachusetts. Both Maine and California have already said that they will continue this program, and that's what we're also advocating for at Project Bread.
And John, what would it mean for the kids in your district if meals were just permanently free?
I think it'd be it's a huge relief for parents to know that they have that choice. When we look at the demographics in my community, how it's changing in southeastern Massachusetts, knowing that a lot of families sometimes make difficult decisions, or have to make difficult choices when it comes to, you know, a simple thing, something that we take for granted like food. So to be able to take that burden off our families while also ensuring that our students are receiving healthy, nutritious meals, to me, it just makes a lot of sense. And if we can do that one thing in our community, you know, to help our kids come to school, have a healthy breakfast, learn, have a healthy lunch, and continue learning into the afternoon, and in some cases, sending them home with meals, I just think it goes a long way in helping to better our community.
So last couple of questions for you. Aaron, now we talked about these supply chain disruptions. From an advocacy standpoint, what I want to understand is somebody not doing something right, or are we just in a gnarly, gnarly situation here?
We are in a gnarly situation. I mean, there's always been supply chain challenges, so it's not new. And as Carrie said, you know, kids are getting fed. So there's no worry that your kid will not have school lunch when they get there. They might have a menu swap. It might be that they were going to have a certain type of chicken and that spice isn't available, so they're having a different one. But yeah, I mean, the global supply chain challenges are impacting every single part of our, you know, economy, and school meals are part of that as well.
So John, when I hear that, what I worry about is you have emphasized just now, John, pretty significantly the importance of the nutrition that kids are getting in these meals. And I wonder, with supply chain and ingredients disruptions, Carrie Young, you heard her say there's still plenty of food, but should we be worried that there is a nutritional impact and therefore potentially a learning impact for kids in these disruptions? Or is that sort of, am I overly concerned?
I wouldn't say you're overly concerned, but it's something that I think we need to watch and be mindful of. I know when I speak with my food service director, and we did send a communication out to our families 2 weeks ago when we had to make some menu changes, because we do want our families, who have students with specific dietary needs, to be aware of what's on the menus in case they need to make adjustments. Students with potential allergies, so families or have to count their calories, we want to make sure that our families are informed and know what the changes are. But I don't believe we're at that point yet. I don't think the supply chain issues that we're hearing across all fields, all areas, have impacted the point where we're not serving, or we're going to be in a predicament when it comes to serving healthy, nutritious meals. I think right now, it just takes additional planning and being able to pivot on a dime. Should you get wind that a certain supply is not going to be available, or having those vendors in your back pocket so that if there is a shortage of milk or there is a shortage of chicken nuggets or pizza poppers, as one of my superintendent colleagues mentioned to me, that they can reach out to that vendor and quickly get something else on the menu or something similar or comparable on the menu, because I'm really concerned about the dietary needs of our family, especially our medically fragile students.
So, Aaron, just briefly, how do we get to the point where we don't need your advocacy and where John isn't worried about the nutrition of kids in the schools?
I mean, universal free school meals is necessary. It is, you know, there's no pathway to ending childhood hunger without universal free school meals. So it's advocating with Project Bread to make this permanent. It's participating if you're a parent right now, participating in school meals. The more kids who eat school meals, the more revenue that goes back into the district to purchase healthier foods, to hire more staff. And just, I just want to give a huge shout out to school nutrition staff across the state, because they've been pivoting since March of 2020 in this crisis, and their goal, they're in this job to feed kids. So I just want to make sure people know, most of them, that is their mission, is to feed kids. And they've been incredible. And now they're facing this supply chain issue on top of everything else.
All right. Aaron McAleer is president and CEO of Project Bread. John Cabral is superintendent of Taunton Public Schools. Aaron, John, thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Thank you.
Okay, so WBUR education reporter Carrie Young is still with us. Carrie, welcome back. How about some reactions to what you just heard?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that really strikes me is, you know, just hearing how much effort goes into getting food on those school meal plates every day. As far as the planning goes, you know, you've got to know what's coming in and being able to plan which days they're going on. And when some of that predictability goes out the window, it's also taking those giant steps of like finding other vendors, knowing what it costs, being able to compare the nutrition, because that's such a big part of the planning too. That really struck me. And then something Aaron mentioned about the level of importance that school meals play in a family's life, that it's, you know, outside of SNAP, it's the number one source of free food. And without that, as we saw in the pandemic when school buildings had shut down, that families were really scrambling. And so I think it's just sort of the magnitude of both serving the food, but then also what role that plays in the family's lives.
So I want to stay on that for a second, Carrie, because what you just said strikes me. We've just spent several minutes now talking about this in the context of kids. But what you're saying is the kids are in the context of a family. And this is essentially for family health and family strategy as well. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, if a family doesn't have to budget for even just a couple of dollars every day for a school meal, that makes a big difference when it comes to like buying school supplies or paying for an electric bill. It just frees up a little bit more so that the family can make ends meet. And, you know, by not having that school lunch shaming, it takes off some of the stress that the child felt when they don't have, you know, control over their family budget necessarily. So a lot of this legislation that is happening will, it seems like it might ease a lot of those stresses on families altogether. Like you said, it does come down to that family unit that this impacts.
So, Carrie, what are you going to keep an eye on going forward now?
Yeah, those supply chain issues, it seems like it's a big deal and it's not going away anytime soon. And so I think I'll be monitoring that, making sure, seeing, you know, if that grows to something bigger, that nutritious meals might be in short supply, although it sounds like that is not at all the case right now. But keeping an eye on, you know, if that happens or not, or if we get close to that, but then also labor shortages. Schools are not immune to the labor shortages we've seen across the economy. It's not just bus drivers. I know they've been making the news a lot, but it's cafeteria staff and other really important positions. So that's one thing I'm diving into right now.
All right. That is Carrie Young. Was and is, Carrie. It's both you. Senior education reporter at WBUR. It's always great to have you on, Carrie. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.